pre-recorded, completely unscripted, and about as organised as the thought processes of some members of the Australian Senate. You're listening to news, views, and opinions on events from here at home and around the globe on politics, business, and society in general. This is the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove.
It's a lovely day in Ballarat. I'm kicking back, thinking of you. I hear that you've been poorly. I am sorry that you're feeling blue. I know what it's like when you feel a little shitty. You just want to curl up and have an itty bitty do-not day. But a lot of people here really miss you, Georgie. They really think you ought to just get on a plane. We all just want you to come home, Cardinal Pell. I know you're not feeling well, and being crook ain't much fun. Even so, we think you should come home, Cardinal Pell. Come down from your citadel. It's just the
Welcome back, listeners. We're up to episode 32 of the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove. That, of course, was a little bit of Tim Minchin for you. He's just recently produced a song titled Come Home, Cardinal Pell. And Velvet Glove, did you enjoy that?
I did enjoy that, yes. And it's, I did enjoy it. Yeah, thank you. But it was very good to hear that. And it was... It was not as good as his. He's the same bloke that did the cold white wine in the hot sun.
White wine in the sun.
Christmas was.
That's right. Yep. It's not as pretty as that, but he certainly sticks it to Cardinal Pell.
Oh yes.
So that's been getting a bit of talk recently. So, kicking right off then on Cardinal Pell. Of course, he is in Rome at the moment, and the news is that he unable to attend the hearings directly in person in Australia due to illness, and that's been in the news a lot in the last week. And a couple of things came out that I found interesting. There was a doctor, Dr. Richard Sarley, West Australian doctor, and he wrote a letter to the editor, and he was subsequently interviewed about it. And basically, he's an atheist, and he's offered to escort Cardinal Pell to Australia if, and even offered to pay for the Cardinal's flight if necessary. So we've got a doctor ready to get a group of physicians to take him. We'll bring him back to Australia, and I like his little quote. He says, it seems to me if the US can transport troops from Iraq with their legs blown off back to Germany for treatment, it would be no problem transporting Cardinal Pell. It's true. I mean...
It is incredible, actually, because, I mean, I know he's under doctor's orders, apparently, not to fly, but... You know, it's not, he's not on death's door.
No.
You know, and it's...
he's not going to travel rough.
He's not going to travel rough. He'll be coming back over first class.
Yeah.
So I find it really hard to accept that that the long journey would be too much of a of an imposition on his heart.
Yes. I did see something by some heart person, old surgeon or... cardiologist saying that, you know, people with this condition find it difficult to get travel insurance. But the point is, he's coming to Australia. Like, if you or I had a heart condition and we're traveling overseas, you know, the cost of treatment in the US would be prohibitive, so they don't want to insure us. But Cardinal Pell would be coming back to Australia. If he has a problem while he's here, we've got great medical facilities. A lot of them run by churches.
Exactly. You know, that's the whole point. And, you know, Richard Sally, the West Australian doctor, said that he's looking for a group of volunteers to bring him over.
Yes. You know, so and people are lining up. So there's actually a movement to fund the victims, some victims, to go over to Rome to be in the room wherever he is when he's giving his evidence so that he's having to face real people while giving his evidence. And there's a bit of a crowdfunding thing happening. And the Tim Minchin song that we just played a bit of, there'll be a link. And if you buy his song, $2.49 from iTunes, then proceeds will go to helping to pay for people to go there. And they had a good response so far. They've raised a fair bit of money, so that's definitely happening.
Yeah, I did read that earlier today, that they'd raised $12,000.
I think even more than that, because I think I read that one man alone kicked in $10,000.
So, is that right?
Yeah, so I think...
Oh, well, they must be well over the 20 then by now.
Yeah, maybe that was a different story. But anyway, I think that's definitely... up and away, that idea. So good on you, Tim Minchin, for once again contributing artistic talent to the cause. But one article I just stumbled across today, and you've only just had a chance to read it, I know, Scott, was in relation to Christina Keneally, and we've mentioned her before.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, I read it and I thought to myself, I wonder how much longer she'll be a Catholic for.
So just to give you background, dear listener, Christine Keneally, former New South Wales Premier, we've mentioned her before where she was really, you know, it was in relation to the Reformation and saying how, you know, the Catholic Church was still stuck in these horrible ways, which she then proceeded to list, and we're thinking, why on earth are you still Catholic? Anyway, she's listened to the Tim Minchin song, and she's admitted that the third time she listened to it, she cried. She was driving in her car, and she had to pull over to the side of the road. And as to why, she says, "Watching Cardinal Pell flounce about in his regal gear and flout the Royal Commission, watching the institution supposedly founded by Jesus grotesquely morph into something so removed from the teachings of Christ, it shakes me to the core. It shakes the very foundations of belief. It gives me no hope." That's Christina Keneally. So I think she's about to come over to the dark side and join us, Scott.
Well, if it gives you no hope, then you've got to wonder about, you know, how strong your faith is in the church itself.
I think that's why she was crying, because her faith is now in question. And another quote from this same article says, "Jesus said there's no greater love than to lay down your life for another. Cardinal Pell says there's no way I'd risk my health by flying business class to Australia."
Yeah.
It's fantastic, isn't it? I mean, I love this story because this is just one of the head honchos of the Catholic Church, just clearly demonstrating that there's... You know, this whole talk about get your morals from the church, and here's one of its famed leaders, and he's not providing a very moral example, and it just, I think it's great from our point of view. I'm loving every minute of his discomfort.
Well, you know, you've hit the nail bang on the head there. The church is supposed to be about giving us all moral guidance and all that sort of thing, and yet, here you have it, one of the head honchos from it.
Mm-hmm.
No. You know, he's not turning up to face the music here in Australia.
Ducking and weaving he is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So at the same time, so this is a report from 11th of February. This is a different from The Guardian. "The Catholic Church is telling newly appointed bishops that it is not necessarily their duty to report accusations of clerical child abuse, and that only victims or their families should make the decision to report abuse to police." So this is in training guidelines written by controversial French Monsignor and psychotherapist Tony Anatrella. So he's high up in the Vatican, and he's got training for bishops, and the guidelines, which the Vatican has released, say, oh, well, you don't have to report child abuse unless the law of the land compels you to. I mean, they've learnt nothing.
No, they've learnt absolutely nothing. You know, it really is incredible. You know, you've got Pope Francis, you know, later on in the article, has called for the church to exhibit zero tolerance of sexual abuse of minors or vulnerable adults by clergy, and that everything possible must be done to rid the church of the scourge of sexual abuse. Well, you know, running to the jacks, I would have thought, would be one of the first things you could do if you're trying to rid the church of the scourge of sexual abuse.
Yep. And their very own training program for bishops is saying, well, you don't have to.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's really appalling that they would have that.
Have you seen the Spotlight film, Scott?
No, I haven't.
I saw it last weekend. Highly recommended. Right. Highly recommended to you and the dear listener. So all about Catholic Church in Boston, and basically the Spotlight team from the Boston Globe, who are kind of investigative journalists, and how they uncovered this massive systematic hiding of abuse and the shuffling of priests around America. And really, really well done, and highly recommend that to you to see. Scott, you got to see that one, Scott. This is right up your alley, really. This is the next movie you should see.
It's one of those. It's I saw the shorts for it at one movie I was at, and I thought to myself, I must see that. So yes, it is. It is one of those that's on my list.
Mm. Another article with a link to it. Basically, Vatican revealing, some statistics of how many complaints it's received and what it's done. It's received since 2004. They've received 3,400 cases of abuse. 848 priests were defrocked, and 2,572 received lesser penalties. And the interesting thing about the statistics is that in recent years, the rate of reporting to the Vatican hasn't slowed at all. Like, you know, despite all the publicity and the royal commissions around the world and movies and etc., the internal reporting of abuse to the Vatican is not slowing down. It's still going on at the same rate, Scott.
Well, and look, I find amazing that they would that reporting would still go on at that level. I just don't know whether or not people are now reporting more, or whether it's, you know, is it that you've only got the hardcore left that still practice the sexual abuse, or whether it's and whether or not the whether or not the reports are just there for the hardcore now, you know, it's
interesting.
It is amazing.
Mm. Scott, there's 410,000 Catholic priests around the world. That's a lot, isn't it?
And then that's a lot, but you've also got 1% of them per annum. Well, sorry, 2,500. Well, no, 3,400 cases. That's almost 1%. Of them, you know, being reported over since 2004.
Well, in the Spotlight movie, it quotes this expert who was involved within the Catholic Church, and he said that the incidence was 6%. So they looked at the number of priests in the Boston area and then worked out 6% meant that there was about 90-odd of them. And what they did to find these priests was the church records were available in a book form as to where priests were located at any one time. And if they were shuffled because of abuse, they would be described as on sick leave or on leave or on absentee or a couple of terms like that. So they basically went through the books and found priests with these notations on them, and then, you know, contacted parishioners near them and basically worked out, they then came up with 89 priests who were child abusers in the Boston area, which was 6%, which is what this guy had said. So so I don't think the Vatican numbers actually show the true level of abuse anyway, Scott. It's, according to the Spotlight movie, something like 6%. Mm. Mm.
Well, it is interesting anyway, isn't it? Yeah. But, you know, that, well, it makes you wonder whether or not... And in this article, it did say that was only the stuff that the Vatican had dealt with.
That's right.
It didn't go into what had been dealt with by lower levels of the church.
Mm. So anyway, 410,000 Catholic priests still running around the world, still under a crazy vow of celibacy, sexually frustrated, and in many, many cases, you know, in charge of vulnerable young kids. Is there any wonder it's still going on? So we're going to talk about sex a bit later in the podcast, I think, Scott, if we get to it, basically in relation to Islam. But the Catholic Church is a good example of sexual frustration leading to an unholy mess. So that's a good bashing of the Catholic Church to start off on, Scott. And now, if we could just turn our attention to our other favourite group to bash, and that would be...
The Australian Christian Lobby.
Yes. Indeed. Do you want to tell the dear listener what the Australian Christian Lobby's been up to, Scott?
The Australian Christian Lobby has asked that the anti-discrimination laws be paused for the duration of the same-sex marriage plebiscite.
Yes. Now, so they can properly express their opinions about gay people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's... I mean, I've got to admit, I'm not really sure where I stand on this because I don't really like laws that curtail freedom of speech.
Yep.
However, there was an argument that was put forward by someone, and I think it was... No, I can't find it. It wasn't in this article. It's not in the conversation article that we'll be linking. But there was an argument. I think it was a Labor member of Parliament said, "What is it that they want to say?"
Mm.
You know, and that really struck home with me. I thought to myself, "Geez, maybe they've got a point there." That, you know, how horrible do you want to actually, you know, what do you want to say that you would need to have the anti-discrimination laws paused? You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, we've discussed, well, we mightn't have, I don't know how much we've discussed. I think I threatened to discuss this about 18C and it's, you know, if you insult or offend, then that's, you know, against the law. And, you know, at times you need to be able to offend and insult, and that's quite legitimate. So part of me is like you, Scott, that I am sympathetic to the fact that you can't talk openly and properly because a simple insult or giving offence can get you into trouble. But I just loved the... delicious sort of irony of all this, of the ACL having to plead for vilification laws to be suspended so that they can have a good and proper go at the gay people. Like, the gall of them, Scott. Like, I mean, this is the sort of thing that you'd write as a comedy joke, you know, in the Onion magazine or something. Like,
yeah.
And it's dead set the truth.
Yeah, I know. And this is the thing that I find incredible about it, is that they've actually, you know, Lyle Shelton, he's, you know, here it is. It can't be easy being Lyle Shelton, the managing director of the Australian Christian Lobby. Certainly has a full dance card, holding back the tide against marriage equality, campaigning against anti-discrimination laws, being harried up the hill and down Dale by Bernard Keane on Twitter, and now it seems meeting the government over the role of the ACL might play in the forthcoming marriage equality plebiscite. You know, it's just... It's absolutely absurd. Now, and my understanding is a lot of these anti-discrimination laws are based in state-based, aren't they?
Well, there's a state and a federal one. So
yeah, okay,
and all slightly different. Yep.
Yeah. Because now, was there a case where a bishop was hauled before the courts in
Tasmania?
Tasmania, mm. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, I don't know what happened there, but I gathered that Tasmania's got a lower threshold or something like that to get people before the courts. And, it just struck me as very strange that they would, you know, on bended knee ask for these laws to be suspended, you know.
Yes.
It's ridiculous.
Yes, it's very good to see the predicament that Lyle Shelton is in. But anyway, interesting in this article that goes on. So it's from The Conversation. Patrick Stokes, senior lecturer in philosophy at Deakin University. And he makes a point that there's a bit of a weakness in the pro-marriage equality campaign, because pretty much what you hear is simply a sort of a liberal libertarian argument that, why not sort of thing in terms of equality. But he makes a point that instead of framing the discussion purely in terms of liberty, marriage equality proponents would do well to articulate a fuller picture of what marriage is and why same-sex relationships are substantively marriages already and deserve legal recognition as such, which I thought was a good argument. So instead of just sticking to the equality libertarian argument, it's to say, well, gay couples living together are what we... Basically, he's saying that, the no case says marriage has two components, procreation and conjugal friendship. And if a relationship lacks those things, then it's not a marriage. But that's not right because, I mean, for starters, postmenopausal couples marry, so they can't procreate. Does that mean, you know, they're not a legitimate marriage? They shouldn't marry? So the way the no case is defining marriage is wrong, and really we should be arguing that marriage is just committed intimacy, and that's what gay people are doing already, so we should just write the law to reflect that. That's what they're doing is marriage. So I thought that was a good argument.
Yeah, that is actually a very good argument. Yeah, it's something I hadn't considered. I had always just taken the libertarian view of the world where, it should just be equal.
Mm.
But, yeah, that's a very good way of looking at it, yeah.
Yeah. The no case wants to say that gay people are bad and evil, but it can't because of racial vilification, you know, the anti-discrimination laws. So the no argument is reduced to arguing that it's just not tradition. It's not the traditional view of marriage. So... So that attacks that argument head on, and you add the libertarian argument in, and you've got a good case. So I thought that was a good idea of his.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, not strictly the ACL, but this is a really good story. Like they're just
this
having a bad...
This is really clever, isn't it? Yeah.
Having a folks, a phenomena in recent times is in high school now. I mean, kids are so accepting these days. It is nothing in a high school to be gay and to take your same-sex partner to a school formal is a regular occurrence now. Like, kids don't bat an eyelid at this. It's fantastic. But anyway...
Well, it is, yeah. It is very different now.
In Victoria, there is a group called Minus 18... and they work with another group called Safe Schools. We've mentioned Safe Schools before. Safe Schools runs anti-bullying campaigns in schools, and the Australian Christian Lobby hates them because often bullying can be associated with gayness. So when I said before, you know, kids today don't bat an eyelid, of course there are some kids who do. So so there is bullying, and Safe Schools runs anti-bullying campaigns, which also deals with bullying of gay kids. ACL has been trying for ages to stop Safe Schools. Anyway, there's a group that works with Safe Schools called Minus 18, and they have decided to run a same-sex gender diverse formal so that kids can go to a formal from various schools and feel super comfortable. $40 a ticket. That's a good idea, Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what they decided to do was to crowdfund this event because kids who couldn't afford the $40. So basically saying to the public, why don't you contribute, why don't you buy a ticket? And that will help pay for a gay kid who can't afford it to go to this formal. So the funny thing is that not the Australian Christian Lobby, but a group which has the same, well, very similar supporters, Facebook group called
Stop Safe Schools Coalition.
Stop Safe Schools Coalition. They were appalled at the idea of a gay friendly formal. So on their Facebook page, they said to their supporters, "Hey, everybody, buy tickets to this event, and then that'll stop kids being able to go because we'll have bought all the tickets, and we of course won't show up, and nobody will show up, and the event will be a disaster." the problem with that plan is that the whole crowdfunding idea is buy tickets not because you're going to go, but the tickets are going to go to kids who register as gay couples who want to go and can't afford it. So
yeah,
every time they bought a ticket, that just meant more kids. More money was going into the bank account and more kids could go to this event. So so they completely mucked it up. And whereas the event organisers were hoping for 15,000, they have now raised $29,000.
And they're talking about having it at a larger venue and that sort of stuff because it's been they've sold so many tickets to it all.
Yes. So it says here, formal organisers say they're baffled by the protest as every ticket sponsored is guaranteed to go to an LGBTI teen. So, you know, I don't know if Lyle Shelton was behind that one as well, but he is having a tough time. And
he is having a real tough time of it at the moment, isn't he? Yeah. Yes.
And, of course, all the publicity because of this group just meant more ordinary people bought tickets as a charitable thing as well. So that's going to be a really successful event. And where else, Scott, but Victoria, where everything seems to be happening, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. You know, it's like I was saying say to you a couple of weeks ago. I think I wish I lived in Victoria lately.
Yeah. So that was a really good story. Okay, we've had a good go at the Catholics. ACL is just Christians in general. Look, we don't want to miss out on the Anglicans. So
no.
Scott.
No, the Anglicans, they did give themselves an honourable mention this week, didn't they?
Yeah, they've popped their heads up over the parapet as well, and promptly been shot down by their own constituents. So
exactly.
So what we've got
this
here
is from the ABC.
Yeah, you want to go ahead, Scott?
Yeah, this is from the ABC. Students angry and confused over Archbishop Glenn Davies' comments on gender equality. In explaining his views that the Bible says men and women have different roles in society and that God intended men to be the heads of women, many present believe he was saying women should not aspire to the same career heights as men. It was a service that was set up for the prefects of the Anglican schools. So you had
some of the girls most
schools, boys' schools,
very prestigious schools.
Yeah, absolutely. So they had them all from, and they had them from all different schools. And they brought in together, and the Archbishop was giving comments on the event, and this is what he's done. He's stuffed up big time. You know, he. Where was he? When asked what Archbishop Davies said on gender equality, the students told the drum that he told them that genders were equal, but the roles they inhabited were not. You know, it's crazy that anyone would have this idea in this day and age. It's absolutely insane that anyone would think that gender equality, gender roles, you know, it's just maddening that he would say something like that.
Mm.
It was ridiculous. You know, it was really crazy.
Yes.
And, you know, and because these the staff and students from private schools and that sort of stuff, they didn't really want to be identified, but they did. You know, if, I encourage you to read the article. You know, the people did actually... There were a couple that did say their names and that sort of stuff. Dr. Bryony Scott, principal of another Sydney's independent non-denominational schools. Young women have long been presented with opinions from others about what they can do, who they can be, and whether they can lead or not. You know, it's absolutely crazy that young women of any denomination would be subjected to this.
Yes, apparently there's a bit of history in this particular section of the Anglican Church. There's a movement for the ordination of women's national president said she was alarmed by the Anglican Church's approach to gender issues. She said that the Archbishop's words were consistent with the fact that the Diocese of Sydney stringently upholds the teaching of male headship, which limits women from roles of leadership within the church and the home, where the male is the head of the household and his wife is to complement him in his role. So there's somebody within the church saying this is just par for the course in the Anglican Church in the diocese of Sydney. And you know, one staff member said, you know, didn't see anything out of the ordinary, said if offence was taken, it was because the comments were misinterpreted by the school students. And I just want to say that I reckon if you gathered together prefects from some of Sydney's most prestigious schools, these kids are some of the most switched-on kids that you will ever come across. There's some really, really bright kids. And they know the meaning of words better than anybody. And to suggest that that group was not capable of interpreting the Archbishop's words is just fanciful. Like, they, I'm sure, knew exactly what he was saying better than he did.
Yeah, absolutely. It was crazy that they would then try and say that, oh, the students misinterpreted.
Mm. So... Yeah. Just briefly, Scott, talking to my son during the week, and he was he lives in regional Queensland, and he was at a ball and got talking to some people at the table, one of whom is a new teacher at a local Catholic school, and he said, oh, you must get some rent assistance for having to come all the way out here to teach. And she said, well, funny you should say that. Because I'm living with my boyfriend and we're not married, it's too much trouble to get rent assistance. Like, she's been warned by the other staff members, don't bother because it's just too hard. And she took this up with the principal and described her situation. And the principal said something like, you know, are you okay with, like, living in the house with that man? Like, is that what you want to do? Like, as if she was somehow coerced into it. So, you know...
That's just madness, isn't it?
Well, I, you know, I'm sure it's going on in hundreds of Catholic schools in regional Queensland, where if you're a new graduate teacher just lobbed into town, if you've brought your boyfriend with you, well, we're going to make it really, really difficult for you to get rent assistance. If you've married a good, you know, Catholic boy or whatever, no problem. But living in sin, good Lord, not gonna help you out.
Bloody hell!
Mm. Are you surprised by that?
I suppose I shouldn't be, considering everything that I've read.
Yes.
And, you know, everything that I've read suggests that that they still do crack down on people that are living in sin, but still and all, I've never heard of it actually happening.
Yeah, so so I reckon that would be happening in many, many cases, and it certainly happened to the young teacher graduate that my son was speaking to, so...
Yeah.
That was good. So there we go, Scott. We've just kicked off with nearly half an hour of just craziness happening in the last week in Australia by religious groups. God, we've got to do something about them to get their get them out of the system and their influence out. Oh, it just
kills me. It does. And, you know, I mean, there was a link that was put up in the last 24 hours on the Facebook page of the Secular Party where it talks about the survey that says, you know, that 60 or 70% of the population want religion and government to be completely separate, you know. And yet we've got this situation that government seems to bend over backwards for them. Anyway.
Yep. All right, we'll travel out of Australia just briefly, and we'll head over to Pakistan, Scott.
Yes.
Another survey report carried out by the United Nations Population Fund, and survey reveals that more than half of all teenage girls in Pakistan believe that domestic violence is justified for at least one reason, and refusing sex would be one of those. So they believe a husband's justified in beating his wife for refusing to provide sex. And that's in Pakistan. And the report also included data from Cambodia, India, Bangladesh and Nepal, which reveals similar attitudes about violence against women.
It's really disturbing, that is, you know, that more than 50% of people who are, and these are school-age girls, you know, they would actually accept that, well, you know, more than 50% of them would accept that it's their lot in life that they're going to end up being beaten.
They're so different from us, aren't they? Like, these other countries, I mean, people are so different across the world now. The disparity in views on things is enormous.
Yeah, it's incredible. Mm. You know, it really is bizarre. Mm. You know that they would accept that.
Mm.
I find that really disturbing, actually.
Mm. Valentine's Day just passed, and you know, it's just a fun little day. You can either treat it as sort of commercialization and ignore it, or you can get into the spirit of it and who cares. But not so in overseas countries.
No.
Once again,
and Indonesia was one of them.
Yes. Pakistan as well. So we've got Pakistan's president denounced Valentine's Day, saying the festival has no connection with Pakistani culture and should be avoided. Denounced it as decadent. So, yeah, little decrees were issued saying that police officers would stop shops from selling Valentine's Day cards and items. So that's how seriously they took it in Pakistan.
Yeah, which I found really incredible that they would go that far.
Yeah. So, interesting, you know, it's not part of their culture, so it should be avoided. You know, if I'm sure he would be in uproar if some Pakistani immigrants coming here were told that they couldn't continue some of their cultural practices because, you know, we don't do that in Australia. But over there, wants to cut off Valentine's Day. So that's happened in Pakistan, happens in many other countries over there as well, where they just can't have a bit of... can't have some fun, can they? Like, for goodness sake, it's not going to hurt anybody.
No, it's really is bizarre, and it's gone really too far in that Pakistan, like Pakistan's official title is the Republic, is the Islamic Republic of Pakistan, and you know they really have taken the Islamic Republic way too far.
Yeah.
You know that they've gone way, way, way too far.
Simple thing like that banned. Yeah. Back at home, just briefly. CSIRO boss had to make an apology. He's having to restructure the CSIRO due to funding cuts, and had problems with fighting against lobby groups. And in it, he made an offhand comment that there is so much emotion in the debate, it almost sounds like religion. More like religion than science. Which I think is great, coming from the boss of CSIRO to just make that analogy. But, of course, different groups were just in uproar at that, and he had to issue an apology for making a reference to religion and emotion in that context. Thought police got onto him.
I was wondering, did the ACL, were they one of the
I didn't have time to find out. I just sort of read things that said, you know, due to various complaints, he had to apologise. Not sure where the complaints came from. I don't know if Lyle Shelton had enough time on his hands to... he was up to his armpits in alligators, as we've already described, and... maybe he didn't have time. See, this is where we need... If we got some money, Scott, in the secular party, we just need to employ somebody who can just issue press releases and media stuff. Like, that's what... if we could get some money from a benefactor, if you're a dear listener, a multi-millionaire out there with a spare 100 grand or so, if you could just plop it in the secular party account, we need media presence, and we need people with time who can write articles and ring up reporters and make contacts and get the word out there to counteract the Lyle Sheltons of the world. I mean, like, at the end of the day, he's a full-time job. I joke that he wouldn't have time to do it, but what else is he going to do? That's his job. He'll be dealing with that. He would be no problem. So, resources. We need them, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, back at home, I found this one very interesting from New Matilda about constitutional recognition of Aboriginals. So that's been in the news in recent times. And, dear listener, you would be aware that there's a call to have Aboriginal people referred to in some way in the preamble of the Constitution. Some sort of recognition, and there was a meeting in Victoria again, Scott.
Yep.
Andrew's government got together with 500, well, it's quoted in the article here, 500 black leaders to discuss this notion, and basically before the meeting even started, a motion was proposed very, very early in the meeting where unanimously they rejected the notion of having constitutional recognition. So they didn't want it.
Yeah, it really struck me as very strange when I read that.
Yeah.
You know, it was, it says it right there, it was passed with unanimous support.
Yes.
And it was before the Minister, Aboriginal Affairs Minister, Natalie Hutchins, was, before she even turned up, and so God knows what she actually said once she got there.
Well, a bit further in the article, it says she admitted during the sort of meeting that in her travels as Minister for Aboriginal Affairs, communities have consistently expressed opposition to constitutional recognition. Very interesting.
It was very interesting, yeah.
Hard to get the reasons, but reading between the lines, it seems to me, Scott, that they are saying that they want a treaty before they have constitutional recognition. So... So yeah, I think
a treaty would be harder to get through, though, wouldn't it?
I would have thought so. But yeah, I mean, they're putting it in that order. So that's interesting. When you're having a discussion or you hear people talking about constitutional recognition of Aboriginals, you can say that it seems that they don't want it. So they do want a treaty. So maybe the discussion has to move on to whether they get a treaty or not. I shudder to think what will be involved in that. All right. just a quick little anecdote about Australian of the Year, David Morrison.
Yes.
We mentioned him before. I saw him on Q&A really for the first time, and I've never seen such sort of hand-wringing by a panel on Q&A as there was, where he was, you know, part of his thing saying, you know, I wish I wasn't Australian of the Year, but I am. You know, I wish there was some of these more worthy people appointed, but they appointed me, so sorry, was, you know, the tone of what he was saying. And anyway, a mate of mine, Scott, was in the Air Force for many, many years and relatively senior. And so he had dealings with David Morrison, and I asked him, well, what sort of guy was David Morrison? And we started off saying that he was a terrible man and just a bully. So that
oh,
was,
really?
Yes, very disparaging of him that way. But told one good story was that their pay packets or their notes about their pay slips, my friend's pay slip was inadvertently put into David Morrison's pigeonhole, and David Morrison got to see how much my mate was paid. And he was technically slightly lower rank, but in the Air Force, where Morrison was the Army, and he was paid more than David Morrison. And Morrison called him in and said, "What's this? How come you get paid more than I do?" And my friend said, "Well, because I can get a job in the big wide world flying aeroplanes, and because of the pay rate I could get, they have to make my pay more. So that's why I get paid more than you." And David Morrison was furious at this. And then there was another meeting and about something else, and something about travel arrangements. And he's going, you know, why are the Air Force personnel traveling 5-star when the Army personnel are just, you know, traveling ordinary class? Like, why is that? And my friend said, do you really want to know why we're traveling 5-star? And he said, yeah, tell me why. Why is that the case? And he said, because they don't have 6-star. And David Morrison wasn't too happy about that. Great line. So anyway, that's a bit about David Morrison. I also saw he's charging a fortune for speaking appearances. The previous Australian of the Year would charge $5,000, and he's charging $12,000. Like, it's a good gig if you're Australian of the Year. You can make a pretty penny in your year as Australian of the Year, so...
Oh, it's amazing that you can actually still charge for it. Yeah.
So, anyway, there you go. A bit of a bagging of David Morrison to add to the religious bagging. Locally, Scott, in Queensland, there's a Facebook group called Queensland Parents for Secular State Schools. And they came along to a secular party meeting once and just sort of described what they do. And...
Mm-hmm.
If you're on Facebook, folks, look them up. They have a thing where they quite often look at schools and their website and their enrolment forms and check if they're complying with the regulations in relation to the signing up of kids for religious instruction classes. And quite often these schools aren't. So they're really doing some good work out there. And they were basically saying, start of the new school year, you know, remember that it should be an opt-in program, this religious instruction in Queensland. So just look carefully at the forms that you're signing, and they said here in one of their posts, we believe the lack of information about the religious instruction program is the main reason for the massive numbers of children supposedly opted in to religious instruction. Parents, through no fault of their own, misunderstand the nature of religious instruction, believing it to be education about the different religions, or even education about a particular religion such as Christianity. It is neither. It is instruction in practicing that religion. And the line I really like here is, think of the difference between sex education and sex instruction, and which one would you be happy for your child to receive at school? So that was really good. And Scott, I've got hold of some of the teaching materials that Scripture Union uses in the schools, and I'm going to talk about that at our secular party meeting. Scott, we last week, I think we gave the wrong date for the secular party.
We did, yes.
So,
yes.
Folks, it's currently, as I speak, Wednesday the 17th of February. So the Brisbane Secular Party meeting is on this Sunday in the Brisbane City Council Library at 1 o'clock. So come along if you are able to. I've mentioned before, it's a little bit like the People's Front of Judea, but we still have a good time. So, yeah, Scott, I've got these materials about what they're actually teaching in these religious instruction classes, and it's very, very interesting. So we'll look at that then, and I think we'll talk about that next week.
Yep, sounds good to me.
Did you ever listen to Dave Allen? Did you ever watch Dave Allen on TV when you were young?
No, I never did, actually.
Never did?
Yeah.
One of my memories of my childhood was watching Dave Allen on TV and just rolling around the floor, laughing so hard it actually hurt. I thought he was incredibly funny. And some people out there may not have heard any Dave Allen. So he's he was brought up a Catholic, so he knows it inside out. And his method of humour was to basically just sit on a chair, smoking a cigarette, drinking whiskey, and telling stories. And really simple format. And anyway, Scott, I'm going to play a little bit of Dave Allen right now.
And ask, do you love him? Do you love him? I don't know. I've never seen him. God loves you. And he wants your love. But if you do not give him your love, he will cast you into everlasting flame. What? He will cast you into everlasting flame. Have you ever burnt yourself?
Yeah, I burnt myself on the candle.
What was it like?
Oh, I'm very sore.
Can you imagine that pain all over your body? That's what will happen to you if you do not love God. What do you think of that?
I love him. What happened to him?
He died because of you. Christ died on the cross because of your sins.
When was this?
It was 2,000 years ago.
They can't blame me. I'm only four, for Christ's sake. I didn't do nothing.
Did he have a daddy? Of course he had a daddy. I've told you he had a daddy. God was his daddy.
He had a mummy.
Yes, he had a mummy. Mary was his mummy.
So God was married to Mary.
No, God was not married to Mary. Mary was married to Joseph. Shut up!
So there you go. There's a bit of Dave Allen. I don't have a lot to say about it, except it's certainly the way he... You know, when I was a kid at a Catholic primary school... Yeah, the nuns and the priests were just scary figures, and the way he portrays them as scary figures is exactly how I recall my childhood with priests and nuns. So there you go, a bit of Dave Allen. All right. Now, Scott, the quiz. I don't think I I don't know if I put it on the running sheet for you. I know I did not give you the link because
no, you didn't give me the link. But you know, I did see it on the running sheet. Yes.
So, the Essential Report again out this week. So, you haven't subscribed to that, have you? I hope you haven't. If you do,
no, I don't.
Unsubscribe because it's a great source of quiz for me.
It's better than you beating me over the head with Mackie the whole time. But, you know,
that's true. There's just a couple of questions here, but this was the interesting one that I really thought was interesting because the asylum seeker babies situation has been in the news. And the question put to the Australian public was, do you think babies born to asylum seekers in Australia should be sent to the detention centre on Nauru, or should they be allowed to remain in Australia? So, Scott, what do you... I'll tell you now, there was 21% don't knows. So of the remaining roughly 80%, what do you reckon was sent to Nauru, and what do you reckon was remain in Australia from that? You got 80% to divide up there.
I'm going to go with 40 each. Yeah. 40 saying keep, 40 saying stay, 40 saying go.
Another 12th man-like performance, Scott. Exactly right. 39% of Australians surveyed said send them to Nauru, 40% said remain in Australia, and 21% don't know. So there's a divided country on that issue, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very... That really is divided, yeah.
Mm. And the other question that followed on from that is, as far as you know, are the conditions in which asylum seekers are kept on Nauru and Manus Island good or poor? What do you reckon?
I reckon 70% would say they're poor.
34% said good, 40% said poor. And 25% said don't know. So, it's a low number, isn't it? I think that
it is.
It's good conditions on Nauru and Manus Island. Only 40% would think it's poor. So, yeah. So, Scott, that's pretty good. That's the quiz. Where are we up to? We're up to... fastest growing religion in Australia, what would most people guess?
Well, most people would say Islam, but they're wrong.
Mm. Yep. So, a new survey out. And also, like, people sort of estimating how many Muslims in Australia, what the percentage is. People would also probably get that wrong as well.
Yeah, because it was 2.2% of the population were Islamic.
Mm.
And the latest census figures show that Hinduism is the fastest growing religion here, which coincides with the growth in the number of Australians born in India.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah.
So so Hindu is our fastest growing religion. And yes, so the actual number of Muslims in Australia is 2.2. When Australians were asked how many they thought were here, they on average thought 18% of Australians were Muslim.
Really?
Mm. So, people...
I don't know why that is. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess Islam is in the news so much that...
People think that you've got a hell of a lot.
Yeah. So, so that was a recent study just out, and... Oh, look, we've travelled around... We've been mostly in Australia today. We've travelled a little bit to Pakistan, but this time, Scott, let's go all the way over to Russia.
Yeah.
You got that one in front of you?
I do, yes. A Russian regional court has ruled the Orthodox Church diocese can repay part of an outstanding debt in prayers rather than money. It is there in black and white. You know, The Orthodox Church diocese can repay 250,000 rubles, $3,244, it owes for the installation of a boiler system, along with an additional 65,000 rubles, $817 in fines and legal fees by praying for those for the health of the company that installed the system.
That's a good system, isn't it?
Now, this is...
Just pay your fines by prayer.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It really is crazy. I mean, like this is a court that made this decision. Yeah. This is not, you know, Vladimir Putin saying, oh, well, you know, they can say prayers and that'll be it. This is a court that's come out and done this.
Yeah.
So it's madness. It really is madness.
Look, I don't know. I think the fingers of Lyle Shelton are behind this somehow. You know, I said he had plenty of time in his hands, and he'd think that's a great idea. If
well, of religious course, groups could a great pay idea, debts, but yeah,
pay debts by prayer. So there's a good one. Hadn't heard that before. That by a simple prayer, you could pay half of the debts. So good luck to that boiler installation company. I'm sure the prayers they've received will be sincere and heartfelt, having extracted them via a court verdict. Scott. In America, Justice Antonin Scalia has passed away. Did I send you that one?
Yeah, you did send it to me, and, you know, the American podcast I listened to, I didn't realise just how, you know, small or liberal they actually were. But there weren't any tears being shed over this man's passing.
No.
Put it that way.
A lot of people skipping and dancing in the streets because Scalia was was on their Supreme Court, which is the equivalent of our High Court. So the highest court in the land, and he was very much pro-religion, and basically Scalia believed that the Constitution said government could not promote one religion over another, but it could absolutely promote religion over non-religion. So that was his view, and that's what he enforced in various judgments. And hence, Scott, why the Satanic Temple is so handy. We mentioned them before, so...
Yes, we have,
you've got
the
Scalia-type argument that you couldn't promote one religion over another, but you could promote religion over non-religion. That's where you need the Satanic Temple to come in and as the nuclear option. So I would submit to you, Scott, that the rise and creation of the Satanic Temple was a direct result of Antonin Scalia.
Well, it really wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, it's you know, you can go through and read all his quotes that he has there, but, you know, he's clearly mad. You know,
Anyway,
we'll
see
where it goes.
It's up to the president to appoint a Supreme Court judge, Scott, and it's one of the most important decisions a president can make. And
the president doesn't actually appoint them full stop. The president nominates people.
And the Senate has to approve.
The Senate then has to approve them. Now, because the Republicans have the control of the Senate right now, they're talking about not appointing anyone.
That's right. They're not going to agree to anybody that Obama puts up, is what they've said already.
Exactly.
They just said, we don't care who you put up. We're not having him.
Yeah. Or her. It really is bizarre. But that's one of the arguments that they've put forward, is they said, well, you know, we can't approve anyone, so, you know, buggy, we're not going to approve anyone.
Yes.
Weird.
So anyway, the Republicans are just going to delay it and hope that they win the presidential election, and that their president will then be able to appoint someone like Scalia. So that's going to be fun and games over there, where the Republicans simply ignore the right of a president to sort of conduct normal affairs. So they've got no shame, and that'll be really interesting. But it is one of the most important things you can... I mean, these guys sit on the bench for 15, 20 years and make big decisions.
And they can't be removed.
Yeah.
They can't be removed, is my understanding.
Yeah. No, that's right. And so you get more questions come up in the American system to do with, say, abortion and things like that at the Supreme Court level because of the nature of their constitution. So ours is more of a procedural document, so the High Court doesn't get involved in those sorts of civil rights arguments like they do in the Supreme Court. So, and they sometimes just rule things just the way they feel like it because of their religious beliefs. They can be quite brazen in that. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. But, you know, we've mentioned a few crazy topics in the podcast so far, Scott. I mean, but this is a good one. In the Dalai Lama, China, and Tibetan Buddhism. This is a cracker. So what we've got is, of course, the Chinese government doesn't like the current Dalai Lama and for political reasons. So anyway, what they've done, even though it's an atheist government, they've... Well, a few definitions here. We've got, in Buddhism, we've got characters who say that they are reincarnated, reincarnated Buddhist masters. So if you're an extra special Buddhist teacher and you're reincarnated, you're a tulkus, also referred to as a Rinpoche. So tulkus, Rinpoche, a reincarnated Buddhist master. And basically, the Chinese government has provided a list of verified living Buddhas or Tulkas who are reincarnated Buddhist masters and have published them on a website, Scott, to inform the citizens which are the real ones and which are the fakes. And it lists 870 authentic reincarnated Tulkas. And I'm going to quote here from the Vice President of China's Buddhist Association said that the query system going online is an important step for China's Buddhist Association to promote religious education and further standardise matters relating to reincarnation of Rinpoches. He further added, in recent years, some fraudsters have been posing as Rinpoches in Tibet and inland China, harming the interests of believers and ruining the reputation of Tibetan Buddhism. Now that there is a Rinpoche query system, net users can check to see if a Rinpoche is genuine or not, which will help protect the legitimate rights and interests of Tibetan Buddhism. Isn't that comforting to know, Scott? You can now, you're not sure if someone's reincarnated, you can just go onto the Chinese website.
Well, it's very comforting to know that, you know, that... you know, something that I would assume would be random and that sort of stuff isn't random at all. It's clearly understood by the Chinese government.
Yes, you know, there's nothing worse than a fraudster, you know, posing as a reincarnated Buddhist, I find. And it is hard to spot the difference, I'll grant that. So a website that does that for you is good. You know, perhaps they'll release an app or something like that would be handy as well. And... anyway, it's all about politics.
Facial recognition. You take a photo of someone, and then they can scan through and find out if they're genuinely the reincarnated Buddhist or not.
Yes. So it's all about politics because the Chinese government doesn't like the Dalai Lama and recognises what's effectively the 2IC as being the proper one. And that's the sort of reason behind it. And I like this bit. The Chinese government last November reasserted its right to choose the next Dalai Lama, saying that reincarnation has never been purely a religious matter or to do with the Dalai Lama's individual rights. It is first and foremost an important political matter in Tibet and an important manifestation of the Chinese central government's sovereignty over Tibet, and that whoever has the name Dalai Lama will control political power in Tibet. For this reason, since historical times, the central government has never given up and will never give up the right to decide the reincarnation affairs of the Dalai Lama. Meanwhile, the Dalai Lama, who celebrated his 80th birthday in 2015, has continuously maintained that his reincarnation is his own personal right. It's
It's really maddening, isn't it?
Just that's great. The Chinese government just taking control of reincarnation. Good on them. Crossing over to Denmark.
Yes.
So
this was interesting.
We've got, of course, refugees flooding into Denmark. And, of course, some of them, Scott, are child brides.
Yes. Yes, go on.
So the question is, what to do? I mean, you've got a 14-year-old girl comes in, supposedly married to this 50-year-old man. And good on the Danish government, which announced that such couples will be separated under Danish law. So, thumbs up for the Danish government. Thumbs down to the local Denmark imam, Osama El-Sadi, of the Aarhus Mosque, who said that, well, it's just a matter of cultural practice and that should just be allowed to continue. Could take that into account. So
yeah, I mean, I found that really, really, it made my skin crawl reading it. He says here, we have to accept that it's a different culture and we cannot destroy family life, told the Danish newspaper. You know, that's ridiculous that anyone would actually say that. I mean, like, you would think that Denmark, you know, it's the most, well, one of the most liberal countries in Western Europe.
Yeah.
And to be told, you know, to have a religious leader turn around and say, well, you've got to accept these families, you think to yourself, no. you know, the Danish, you bang on the money, thumbs up to the Danish government, they did the right thing by saying that they're going to be separated.
Mm. Yep.
But, you know, to have this guy turn around and say that, you know, these are, you know, just different culture. No, it's not different culture. You know, it's bloody disgraceful.
Yep. So they found 27 minors living as part of a married couple in the asylum system in Denmark. And the Minister of Integration said it is completely unacceptable that there are currently minors within the Danish asylum system living with their spouses or partners. And I've asked the Danish Immigration Service to immediately put a stop to it. Good on you.
Yeah, and absolutely good on him.
Meanwhile,
you know, it really was the right thing to do.
Meanwhile, in Norway, they found 61 minors were married when they sought asylum in the country. The youngest, Scott, was an 11-year-old girl.
And this idiot says it's just, we just have to accept that it's different culture.
Yeah.
You know.
I've got, Scott, we're coming up to time, I reckon, and
we've still got quite a lot.
We have, and next week, folks, basically, great article talking about the sexual motivation of religious extremists. That's really worth looking at, and about opinions as well, and we'll eventually get back to Mormon Corner as well. So, and we'll also be looking at the teaching materials used by Scripture Union and others to indoctrinate and brainwash children. And some of it is quite anti-Semitic as well, which is quite shocking. So that's all for next week, Scott. We'll close off there. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll talk to you next week.
Remember, if you're not doing anything this Sunday, secular party meeting, or if you've got a spare $100,000 to help a media person, donate it into the secular party account, a little note saying that the fist prompted you to do it. And, yeah, very good. We'll see you all a lot. No, I won't see you. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Talk to you next week. Bye now.
Well, dear listener, did you enjoy that episode of the podcast? If you did, I've got a favour to ask. First up, tell some friends. Let them know about the podcast. You'll be discussing something at some time, and you might be repeating something I've said. And when you're talking to your friends, say, hey, I heard this on this podcast, and it's worth listening to. And maybe pick an episode that you think's a good one and direct them to it. Like, grab their phone and go to their podcast app and search for Iron Fist Velvet Glove and subscribe on their behalf on their phone and just put the word out. The other thing is you could become a patron and support the show. So if you go to our website, you'll see a link to Patreon, and there are some different options for subscribing and paying per episode. And really, the amount that you pay depends on what you get from the podcast. So there's different levels ranging from $1.50 Australian to, I think, $10 and various ones in between. It's really, what do you think it's worth? Is it worth a cup of coffee? Is it worth more than that, less than that? Whatever you get out of it, because not everybody gets the same. Maybe you don't listen to the whole thing. Maybe you never talk about it with people. Maybe you really couldn't care less half the time whether the podcast is there. It'll be different for everybody. So if you get a lot out of the podcast, contribute a bit more. If you don't get much, contribute less. But in any event, you can subscribe there. If you don't like the idea of a regular subscription, the website has a link to a PayPal donation. So you could just do a one-off donation every now and again. So there you go. It'd be good to spread the word, get a few more listeners. And that way, look, if we ended up getting more listeners and more money, we could do maybe a second episode or more special episodes, provide some more content. So it's up to you. If you think it's worthwhile, let people know. Thanks.